Hello and welcome back to the Dynasty Locker Room Podcast Network. I'm your host today, Tess Monster, and I'm here with a very special guest who I'll get to shortly. But you know what? We've been talking a ton about baseball since the beginning of April, but officially welcome back to football season, boys. We're hitting you with back-to-back days of podcasts to get you ready for your draft and everything that happened in the offseason. With me today, the one and only Jason. How are we doing today?
Doing well. Like you said, with baseball in full tilt, that's where a lot of, I know your attention's been, a lot of my attention's been too. Especially this year, as Twins fans, giving us a little bit to pay attention to compared to last year at this time. I think they were already effectively eliminated from playoff contention at the end of April, early May.
Yes.
But with the draft having just happened and an absolute flurry of trades and free agent signings leading up to the draft, let alone the amount of trades that happened during the draft, that leaves quite a bit of fodder to talk about for football.
Absolutely, and I'm thrilled to have our football specialist down here to talk about that with me. Before we dive into it too much,
who else is joining us?
What's that?
Who else is joining us?
Oh, well, nobody else I'd care to have on here. Well, before we dive in, we'll do a little housekeeping. Obviously, we're from the dynastylockerroom.com. That's where you can find everything Jason's written, everything I've written, as well as Tyler Carlton and Nation himself. Feel free to swing by the forum, chat with us and any other members about anything fantasy football related, or whether it's baseball, hockey, or if you just want to chat. Obviously, we're here on the podcast. Best way you can help us reach other viewers like you is to give us a rate, give us some comments, and we'll be able to reach a wider audience. Obviously, you can find us on Twitter and Reddit. I'm DLR Test Monster. Jason's still living in the Stone Age, but most of our other writers are also on social media as well.
I feel safest in the Stone Age.
Well, let's dive into it because we've got plenty to talk about today. Obviously, we've got a handful of trades, and Cleveland was the center point of a pair of them, getting Deshaun Watson via trade and signing Amari Cooper. What do we think of the impact that these guys are going to have? Do we think Deshaun Watson plays this year?
That is just such an interesting
It's a loaded question.
It's so loaded. You know, if I can pull from MLB, and, you know, you look at not quite the same situation, but not that much of a different situation, and Trevor Bauer just got that unprecedented two-year suspension from baseball. Now, obviously not the same sport, but football's had plenty of its own issue with respect to domestic violence and similar issues. So when you see another major league in the American professional sport landscape levy a punishment like that, you got to wonder if Roger Goodell is going to take note, because I think the important piece here is, yeah, Deshaun Watson hasn't had any actual legal ramifications come against him through the courts, at least yet. Certainly not from, I think there's some civil cases and stuff that are still pending, but
22.
Everything else hasn't been. But at the same time, Trevor Bauer never had anything brought against him in the courts. Nothing stuck through the courts.
Right.
So does he play? I mean, he was never suspended last year. Now, granted, football didn't have to because he took himself off the field. But, you know, if I got to think that he gets some form of penalty unless it's really proven that all of these people that brought stuff against him really were just, after something, after his fame or something like that. But one or two is one thing. 23 plus is a whole nother to prove that it's fake.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess the only thing I wonder is how real is that vendetta that Rob Manfred has against Bauer? But I guess that's
fair.
That's a discussion for another time.
It is, but relevant.
I realistically feel like Deshaun Watson, with the weapons that they have there, I mean, obviously you've got Nick Chubb and a stable full of running backs like Kareem Hunt, You've also got, you know, adding Amari Cooper to Donovan Peoples-Jones, who was pretty good after OBJ left last year. You know, to add him to that, and then drafting David Bell, I think that's an exciting core of wide receivers that he can potentially be throwing to if he plays at all this season. Definitely something I would be excited about.
Absolutely.
I think that's the biggest caveat here, though, is the absolute uncertainty of what, if anything, we're going to see from Watson this year. I guess I'll take the side of being an optimist. And obviously, the situation in Cleveland is, you know, clear cut better than what he would have had in Houston last year. And I think it's a big upgrade. I think Amari Cooper obviously took a back seat last year. And I think him being the bona fide number one again, like he was back in the days and with the Raiders and early on in Dallas, I think that's a big upgrade for him, especially to play with the star quarterback, the quality of Deshaun Watson. So definitely an upgrade there. I guess at right now, though, with the uncertainty, I don't know how I can rank Deshaun or Amari Cooper among their positions, given the uncertainty. What do you think?
I completely agree. In a vacuum, in a perfect situation, this Cleveland team, just from a football perspective, just got just so much better.
Yeah.
But and even from a fantasy perspective, I look at Stefanski's ability to make that team score points and to be able to bolster, at the very least, those running backs as fantasy relevant. Obviously, Baker's not the answer there. So from the receiver standpoint, we really haven't seen much in the past few years with that.
But, yeah, I mean, look at how he tanked OBJ's value.
Exactly. And I mean, obviously OBJ didn't come back and be the guy that he was in New York, but immediately.
No, but we saw what we did it with the Rams. Relevant. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so, I mean, Deshaun in his own right is a bona fide top 10. If not a top five in right enough situation from fantasy, I think, as a quarterback, you know, from his class, from those younger group of quarterbacks, you know, the Herberts, the Burrows, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, like all those guys, I would take him over quite a few of them. Not all of them, obviously. You take Mahomes and
Josh Allen.
I would take him over Kyler. I'd take him over Lamar. I'd take him over Herbert. Like all those guys, I'd take him over. So
yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, he's a bona fide superstar, and we've seen it before. I mean, if like you said, in a vacuum, he's probably QB3. But you know, not knowing if he's going to play this year, I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, the last item or the last bit I'll say on that, if Baker's still around. And with Deshaun, like, you know, they can't just say like, okay, you're gone, because they don't know if they're gonna have a quarterback.
Right.
It could be a really and it's Cleveland. We can't look past the fact that it's Cleveland, and somehow, some way, that's a cursed franchise. Having Baker around, who's very unhappy, which is understandable.
Yes.
The fact that Amari's been traded a couple times, and I mean, granted, he wasn't the number one there last year, and he will be this year, so he'll be happy, but. He's moved around a couple of times, and you know, he kind of sounds like a bit of an issue in Dallas last year. So there's some personalities and some drama to deal with, and a lot of mouths to feed. So I could see it. I could see it imploding on itself. But again, repeating myself, in a vacuum, this team should be a lot of fun to watch. Deshaun, if he plays, should put up massive numbers. Amari Cooper should be a top 10 receiver. You know, the running back should be able to feast the way that they have. Mm-hmm. There's no reason that offense can't support multiple top 10 to 15 options at almost every position.
Absolutely. And speaking of offense, wow, the AFC West, I mean, the Vegas Raiders absolutely put themselves in that conversation by that blockbuster trade, getting Davante Adams away from Green Bay. And moving aside from how giddy about that I am as a Vikings fan, this is a huge fantasy impact. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm going to keep using the on paper in a vacuum term. What a downgrade for Davante, right? To go from one of the better or best quarterbacks that we've definitely seen in our lifetime.
Oh yeah.
To Derek Carr, but the element is, you know, they were college teammates. He really wanted to play with them. Derek Carr's not a terrible quarterback. He's not great, but he's not terrible. Devontae is that good of a route runner. You know, is there a way for him to bolster Derek Carr's numbers and still produce pretty relevant? You know, is he going to be top three? Probably not, but still top 10. I could see that working out for both players.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. In terms of production for Devontae as a fantasy wide receiver, I don't think there's any way he replicates anything close to what he did in Green Bay, obviously. Obviously, he was the number one guy there, very little competition for targets or anything like that. But going somewhere where, you know, obviously there are plenty of other weapons, I think that says a lot too. And maybe it, you know, takes away some of those double coverages. I don't know. I mean, Hunter Renfro looked pretty good last year. Obviously, you've got Darren Waller there. There's going to be some mouths to feed, but it should free him up for some better looks, even at the expense of less volume. And you can't forget about the running game there either. Going to be a pretty balanced attack, and that division is going to be a slugfest this year, I think.
God, it's going to be insane.
And I mean, moving on with the trades, I mean, you've got Matty Ice, my fantasy MVP from years past, moving over to Indy. What do we make of that? I mean, is he relevant enough for us to care?
I don't think so. I really think, you know, you look at last year, granted, you know, he had the rookie tight end, mm-hmm. Mr. Pitts, who put up good numbers just from a fantasy perspective. It was so spread out, you didn't really get the vibe of it until you realized, oh, he put up over 1,000 yards and there just weren't the touchdowns to kind of support that. Obviously, Calvin Ridley had to pull himself out for mental health purposes, so he wasn't really there. But Cordell Patterson was lighting up numbers, and it's like you look at a guy who was on a team that had some relevant offensive pieces, but he was largely just completely cast, you know, you could cast him away easily. So I kind of think it's just another attachment of, another addition of the Philip Rivers show in Indy.
Yeah. And that's kind of the vibe I think I'm getting too, but I feel like, I mean, certainly not a top quarterback, but certainly an effective fantasy quarterback, I think. And especially when I think of what they've got there in the running game, I think that could open him up for some decent shots down the field. I mean, we can't forget that Michael Pittman was absolutely a breakout player last year. And being able to throw the ball to him, and, you know, I don't know who they're going to line up aside from him. Probably the rookie wide receiver that they drafted this year, Alec Pierce, probably lines up across from Pittman. And then at tight end, it'll probably be some version of Mo Alie-Cox and Jelani Woods lining up at tight end. So, It's hard to know what to make of the secondary options after Pittman, I think, but certainly something could be opened up with how effective Johnny Taylor is on the ground, where I think he's going to be able to, especially at the ripe old age that he is, certainly has the experience to be able to pick apart a defense given time. I mean, we've seen him do that with Julio. I mean, how many targets that he's had in Atlanta over the years. I think there's upside there, but I'm certainly not going to be wanting to plug him in at my QB1, but, you know, certainly in a QB2 league, I think it brings him back to relevance at least.
I would agree with that. And I do think the running back point you made is fair from the standpoint. He really hasn't had a good running back since Devonta Freeman had that last year in Atlanta. So, I mean, it's been 2 or 3 years since he's had a legitimate running attack. Like, obviously Cordero last year was more of a receiver than he was an actual running back. So, yeah, to have a more balanced attack than he really did, I'll buy in on that. I think that's fair. And honestly, I kind of think this is a make or break season as far as people's opinions of both him now and Derek Carr with the weapons that they both have. The rubber needs to meet the road, or else the detractors may be right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, for Matty Ice, it's, does he have anything left in the tank? And for Derek Carr, I think it comes down to, well, you've been solid, but we've got the weapons for you now. How good are you? And I think that this really determines whether Derek Carr is a QB1 for this year and maybe 2 or 3 years down the road. And for Matt Ryan, it's how long can he stave off irrelevancy? So those will be fun to watch. Some other interesting moves. Obviously, we saw a trio of wide receivers get traded in the offseason, and arguably top 20 wide receivers, all of them. Tyreek Hill moving away from Kansas City, getting a huge deal to go play with Tua in Miami. What do we think of that?
I can't put myself in the shoes with that stupid kind of money to understand the thought process. But it would take quite a sum of money to take me out of that situation that I'm in Kansas City to go play with Tua and that flubber arm of his. As you can tell from that comment, I'm not a Tua guy as far as fantasy is concerned.
Yeah.
I think Tyreek's numbers just plummet. Granted, he's athletically and speed-wise especially just a freak. So if anybody can salvage some relevancy without much of a quarterback, you know, and try to be quarterback-proof, I guess we should say. I guess I'd have to put my money on Tyreek over anybody right now, just about. But there's no way in my mind's eye that you can sustain even, you know, 85% of what he had with arguably the best quarterback in the league right now, and just an offensive system that's just built. That offense was perfect for all the pieces in it. And now he's going to Miami, which is another dysfunctional franchise right now.
Right. There's no question about that, that his numbers take a huge hit. And, you know, from my perspective, we're not even necessarily talking about Tua when you look at all the mouths to feed. I mean,
right.
They signed a pair of running backs that we'll talk about in a little bit, but, you know, aside from him, they already had Jaylen Waddle, who had an absolutely monster rookie year with the volume that he pulled in. And let's not forget that Mike Gesicki came back from free agency to sign there. So definitely plenty of mouths to feed coming from a system that realistically only featured himself and Travis Kelce. I don't think there's any way, you know, even if Patrick Mahomes is throwing to this offense, I don't think he repeats that kind of production. And now you talk about a downgrade at quarterback. I mean, we're certainly talking about a make or break year for Tua alone, who, you know, Miami was obviously in discussions to upgrade at quarterback with Deshaun Watson and a few other names. So I think if Tua can't lead them to the promised land or certainly a deep run this year, he's probably done.
Completely agree on that.
So, yeah, I mean, I think on paper it's a very exciting offense, but I question what it does for all of their combined fantasy outputs, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's certainly not the same comparison, but I think you can draw lines to the team we talked about at the top with Cleveland. I mean, Baker and Tua, to me, aren't that different of quarterbacks. And granted, OBJ, where he was at, and then with injuries and stuff like that, but you got OBJ and Jarvis Landry, who are both relevant. Waddle and Hill are more, you know, preeminent talents that have more upside than those guys. But you also had the running game, you know, supposedly had Njoku. Like, you kind of have some stuff where you can compare, and if it doesn't work, you can have all the bells and whistles on the outside you want. But if the field general can't make it work, it doesn't matter.
And speaking of field generals that I question if they can make it work, we're going to move over to A.J. Brown on his way to Philly.
That poor son of a bitch.
Oh, that poor fella. I mean, Ryan Tannehill is a functional quarterback, but not a great one in my personal opinion. But you go over to Jalen Hurts, and he might be a good fantasy quarterback, but he's a terrible NFL quarterback, and I can't believe the Philadelphia Eagles let that go another year. From a fantasy standpoint, I mean, you look at A.J. Brown and being the focal point in that Tennessee attack, I think this is probably a downgrade. More mouths to feed, certainly. I mean, the ghost of Julio Jones didn't slow Brown down last year in Tennessee, but Devonta Smith is nothing to sleep on. And don't forget, they still have Dallas Goedert, who's still definitely a top 10 tight end, definitely the top red zone target for Jalen Hurts when he's not running for 120 yards and decides to throw the ball. So I think there's a definite downturn there. But in addition to that, you just see with the injury issues alone, I think this takes him out of my top 10 dynasty wide receivers. What are your thoughts?
It definitely takes him out of my top 10, which bums me out because, you know, I loved him in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. He's just a fun player to watch, obviously a great locker room guy there and everything. So it's a bummer that Tennessee didn't want to pay him. I get it. It's hard to make all the dollars work. But I think the biggest piece, like you said, even aside from Hurts, is the injury stuff, where now he goes to a team where if he's going to be relevant, it's going to be relevancy through volume, because he's not going to get a lot of quality passes. It's going to be he's just going to be peppered. And a guy who's been used a lot, but in a better situation in Tennessee, is now going to be quite possibly run into the ground in Philly to get the value out of him. Is he going to be looked at in the red zone? Tough to say. Like you said, with Goddard, I mean, Hurts has a one track mind. And
read one and run.
Yeah, totally. So, to me, quite frankly, I could be getting a little aggressive. This possibly bumps him out of my top 20, quite frankly, because not from a talent perspective, but just from you got to look at it from the what points is he actually going to put up. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise to see him be a 7 point per game kind of guy, which means nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that seems a little spicy on the surface, but it's definitely a palpable, definitely something I can see happen. And when you look at, okay, he's not going to be a red zone target, so what kind of touchdowns is he going to get? Devonta Smith is obviously the burner here with the speed, and Brown's obviously always been the possession guy who could get peppered with the targets. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out over the middle of the field between him and Hurts. Sorry, I was already moving on to the next player in my mind and made the
Floridian slip.
Well, while we're talking about Zach Ertz, we're going to move over to Hollywood Brown in Arizona. Is Hollywood Brown going here a bigger deal now that we know DeAndre Hopkins is going to be out for the first six games?
I think so. I've never fully bought in on Hollywood as a hire. You know, I viewed him as more of like a top 20 kind of a guy. Mm-hmm. But granted, that was because of the quarterback play with Lamar. But going back to previous conversations we've had, as the listeners know, we're not high on Kyler Murray either.
Right.
I think Kyler's good enough in certain situations to hit Hollywood and make him get enough points. But I think while DeAndre's out, it's a big deal. Once he's back, I don't know how much relevancy really he has, because I don't know how many receivers Kyler can support at this point from what we saw last year.
Yeah, I definitely think that's valid. And you got to remember, Kyler was checking down regularly to Chase Edmonds while he was there. So I think the running back's in play. Obviously, we saw him feed Zach Ertz plenty. And so the question comes back to, we already saw a downtick for DeAndre Hopkins last year. AJ Green was relevant. Rondale Moore is still there. So if you've got, you know, four healthy wide receivers when DeAndre comes back, along with a tight end and a running back, I agree with you in what can you reasonably expect? I mean, it might be one of those boom or bust weeks where it's his week and he's going to put up 20 to 30 points, but it could be the flip side of the coin and he gets one catch for 14 yards and that's it. So what kind of stock can you reasonably put in that? The upside is immense, obviously, while DeAndre is out, but I definitely don't know what to expect beyond that.
I view him very much like a DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, that's fair. I absolutely think that's fair. And, we'll see what happens. Obviously, the sky's the limit with what he did with Lamar, and he definitely made Lamar look very good last year. We'll see. I don't think six viable pass catchers are supportable here, and we'll see who the odd man out is. I mean, he's going to have plenty of time to build that rapport, but he's going to have to make the most of those first 6 weeks in order to generate extra looks. And moving on to free agency. Speaking of former Cardinals, we've got Chase Edmonds and Raheem Mostert moving on to the Miami Dolphins. Does this make you feel any differently about that running game there? Obviously, we've talked quite a bit about the pass catchers and what we think of Tua. Do you think either of these running backs are viable? Are we looking at a committee?
I think we are looking at a committee until Mostert gets hurt.
That's fair. It's inevitable.
I think, you know, looking at his track record, you and I have talked about this, and you know where I stand. I don't believe in expecting injuries out of people in any of sports. You just can't. From fantasy, you kind of need to play for that. But like as a fan, and you know, if we're talking the real sport itself, you can't bank on that.
No.
But at his age and at his injury history in this league, I don't know why I would expect it to get better now. And neither of them, to me, you know, obviously in the situations they were in, it fit. I don't necessarily think that Miami's like, oh yeah, plug and play. I think they're nice pieces. I think they're streamable guys, but certainly fringe RB3 to flex territory for either of them in my mind's eye.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it comes down to, I definitely see Mostert being the between the tackles guy while he's healthy, a la like a Miles Gaskin last year. And I definitely think Chase Edmonds reprises a similar role as more of a pass catcher situational back. And obviously with some of the faults Tua has had to date, that could be a factor where either of these guys could certainly be flex worthy week to week. But I just don't know what else is beyond that. If Mostert gets hurt, I mean, I don't know who the next man up is in Miami, but Edmonds would certainly be the favorite, I think. But again, as we've talked about with that passing game and how effective Gaskin was as the lone back last year, I just don't know what you can reasonably expect beyond flex level fringe production.
Totally. And I'll say this too, if it's a non-PPR league, I want absolutely nothing to do with any of them.
Yes.
I would only consider if it's PPR, and honestly, it's pretty much got to be full point PPR for me to be even interested.
Yeah, that's absolutely reasonable. And while we're talking about former Arizona running backs, we're going to go right back to Arizona. We've got James Conner and Zach Ertz staying at home in Arizona. We've talked about what it means for the pass catchers. Obviously, there's a lot of mouths to feed. Do we reasonably think James Conner comes even remotely close to repeating the numbers he did last year?
That's a good question. And I think we need to look at the numbers kind of under that first layer, like you and I have discussed in the past, where he was buoyed by touchdowns.
Absolutely.
More so than even meets the eye. I still think he's relevant. Quite frankly, he interests me more than either of the two running backs we just talked about.
Oh, absolutely. But,
is his yard per carry going to be good? Probably not. If he, you know, I can't remember. Was it 19 touchdowns he put up last year or something?
18.
Yeah, I mean, is he going to do that again? Obviously not. You can count on not too many fingers how many guys consistently have put those up, even in a couple of years, that are you know, objectively better running backs than James Conner has ever been. But, you know, again, we talk about quarterback play with dump offs, and Conner's going to be in the game and Kyler's going to be looking. Can he salvage, you know, a top 15 running back, you know, be a, maybe a low end RB2? Yeah. I think I like him enough there, especially in comparison to a few of the other names we've talked about.
Yeah. I think your touchdown point is spot on, and we've talked about that here before. I mean, when you look at the number of touchdowns he supported last year, we're approaching 120 points, and in half point PPR, he only put up 240. So you can divide that in half and you're at 120 of, you know, straight up production. So outside of the touchdowns, I don't know what you can expect. We're not going to see Chase Edmonds catching the passes. So I think there's an uptick there. But if he gets half of the touchdowns this year, I'm going to call it a very good year, because that's still 180 points, and I'll take 10 points a week out of my running back. But I think that's the ceiling for him realistically. And that might sound far-fetched, but 18 touchdowns isn't happening.
No. And I don't think it's far-fetched. I think that's a pretty fair assessment. You know, could he dazzle and maybe sneak out a few more and go above that projection? Sure. But I think that's a safe assumption. And really, if he's going anywhere else, it's lower than what you just said.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was the only fit for him, and definitely got the money to stay there, and good for him. Definitely a productive player in Pittsburgh. Definitely happy for his success, but certainly don't expect it to repeat back-to-back years. Moving on, we'll head over to Tampa Bay, I suppose. I don't know if anybody's sick of hearing about Tom Brady, but obviously he's back, and so is Leonard Fournette. What are we making of this offense?
Let's say, what is it? Control C, Control V. I have no reason but to say see last year and it will all happen again. Fournette has absolutely, for all his faults, shown that being in Tampa is the right fit for him. And it definitely came back to relevance where I thought there was nothing left.
Yeah.
And I mean, Brady's Brady. He was the top three, I believe, fantasy quarterback last year.
Right.
And if you look at any of the stats that I think if you watch any NFL game, regardless of who's playing, they'll show you Tom Brady stats between commercial breaks. he has only gotten better in the last 5 to 6 years versus like when he was in his 20s. So obviously he did not want to be at home with the family. So he wanted to be back on the field, which means
Fire.
Yep. So I think much of the same of last year, with a desire to prove that last year's playoff loss was a fluke, going for another Super Bowl. I think they could both put up pretty similar numbers.
Yeah. To me, the biggest question mark is around Fournette. And obviously we know Chris Godwin's going to miss a couple weeks. I just wonder if Fournette can reasonably sustain a 70-80 pass catching season again. Definitely some of the high water marks that we've seen around the league in recent history. And being able to do that in a PPR league is absolutely a boon. Even in a half-point PPR league, he produced James Conner-like numbers without the touchdown production that he had. So absolutely impressive. That's the biggest question mark to me is, now that Brady's getting older, we've seen him definitely not be the focal point in the offense, even though he's still passing. But he's checking down more, obviously. We saw Gronkowski and Fournette both be very effective last year. So what is Fournette's role as a runner going to be? Obviously, we saw them draft Rashad White to be whatever Ronald Jones was last year, I guess the heir to that backup role. So I wonder how much he gets involved. And, I mean, realistically, Fournette was averaging, give or take, 10 to 15 carries a game. So if that aerial game to Fournette isn't there, which I think it will be, but if that takes a downtick at all, definitely impacts the production on my end.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And speaking of Ronald Jones, we're going to move over to Kansas City. Obviously, we saw them lose Tyreek Hill, but they've added Ronald Jones, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and Juju Smith-Schuster. The passing game, who's our go-to guy outside of Travis Kelce, and do we care at all about Ronald Jones?
Do you happen to know what Andy Reid's track record is with fumbling running backs by any chance?
Would you explain?
I feel like Ronald's going to come out and start fumbling right away like he does, and it's going to be dependent on if he gets put into the doghouse in the first 5 minutes of the first quarter of the first game. Yep. Or if Andy Reid gives him a bigger leash than Bruce Arians had. I honestly, past that, I don't know what to make of him. You know, obviously, he's more of a between the tackles kind of a guy than Hilaire is.
Yeah.
And he's done nothing to solidify. You know, it's kind of been a backup running back carousel trying to fill in the holes that Hilaire provides from what they thought they were getting. I'm just not sold on Ronald Jones though, because in an offense, to me, just from a prolific offense standpoint, Kansas City is not that much different than what Tampa was putting up with big quarterback play,
yeah,
tight ends, receivers, running backs, all of that. And Jones just never had a footing. And his, you know, I think is this his fifth season, I want to say?
Fourth or fifth.
Yeah, and just hasn't gotten a foothold. Granted, you know, maybe it's like the old baseball adage of just a new lease on life and watch him go. But to me, this is kind of what I was saying about the Tampa guys that came back. Kind of the same, more of the same for me. I think he'll be, I don't even know if he's flex worthy in my mind's eye, just because I don't think the intangibles that he has would supplant Hilaire enough where he's going to be between the tackles guy. And it's like, you know, maybe he'll get some more touchdowns and stuff, because obviously Clyde can't be that goal line guy, as we've seen time and time again. But Patrick's not afraid to find Kelsey in the red zone either, or even on the 1 yard line.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think as far as running backs go, I think the only optimism I have is obviously there's no more Darrell Williams and there's no more Jerick McKinnon there. So I think he's obviously the A1 handcuff to have. And if Alaire experiences any injuries again, he's going to definitely be the back to own. No question there. It'll be interesting to me how it shakes out in the wide receiver room as far as it goes for fantasy. I think we see Juju pick up a large role here. Somebody has to take some of those targets Tyreek was getting. And I don't think Mahomes has never been the guy to distribute evenly. So it's going to be somebody. I wonder if it's actually going to be Juju, aside from putting the wheels ahead of the cart here. I mean, obviously you still have Mecole Hardman, who's been there a long time, adding Marquez Valdes-Scantling and taking a rookie in Sky Moore highly in the draft. I wonder if any of them actually supplants Juju and he falls back to that slot receiver role that we've seen him excel in the past. A lot up in the air here at the wide receiver department.
There is. I think if Juju can prove healthy, even, you know, and ultimately he probably does end up as a slot guy, but we've seen teams where the slot guy is, I mean, look at Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
You can have that slot guy be your main guy, which I think is where he is, and that's where he brings his value. I honestly, Valdes-Scantling and Hardman really don't move the needle for me much. I had some investment in Hardman early on in my dynasty league and moved on, and I really haven't seen anything that's made me regret that since. Valdes-Scantling, he's a guy that'll put up like a game or two. Granted, he had somebody more bona fide in front of him than what he's got here. He definitely has more of an opportunity, I think, than what he had with Devontae in front of him.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, Rodgers is the guy that's not afraid to distribute. And he didn't look his way enough to make him really all. I mean, Scantling is always in free agency, you know, or easily able to be traded for if you wanted to in the past. So I don't see a huge change from my perspective. That's just my opinion on him. I definitely think Juju is the guy not named Kelsey to own in that passing attack. Obviously an injury or something weird changes all that, but going into the season, I definitely would put most of, if not all, my eggs in the Juju basket.
Yeah. Well, moving on from that, I think we'll talk about some more running backs here. We already talked a little bit about Atlanta, so we'll glance over Patterson here in sake of time, and we'll move on to Melvin Gordon re-signing in Denver. Boy, how angry are Javonte Williams owners, and do we see a 50-50 split again this year? Those are my big questions. Obviously, we saw them both tie for 203 carries last year, which absolutely baffles me, but Melvin Gordon looked really good with a smaller workload and earned every bit of that paycheck, and there's no reason why he wouldn't have come back here. I thought that from the beginning. Javonte Williams, I don't know if they're ever going to give him a true RB1 workload, given what he showed last year. Obviously, he looked like the better runner of the two, but man, it says a lot when you can trot out two different running backs and have a very similar look. What does this do for both of their outlooks to you?
Well, one of the biggest things to me is Russell Wilson coming in at quarterback.
Yeah.
They didn't have a quarterback last year, no matter who they put in there. and Russell's shown a clear aversion to throwing within 3 yard line, the third 3 yard line. I'm sorry, handing it off. He has no aversion to throwing it.
So it's like we saw that in a Super Bowl.
It's almost like you saw it in a Super Bowl. no, I think that the method they went with last year, that recipe of the two of them pretty much a 50-50 was good, because Melvin, when he's clicking, is a really good running back. And obviously Javonte's got the pedigree and there's upside and stuff. But to your point, like, is he going to get that RB1? Probably not right now. To bring Melvin back, I don't know why you would change what was working last year when right. you've now brought in a quarterback. Now, you know, maybe it splits into something where they see something that, okay, Javonte had, you know, maybe they were kind of doing that whole quarterback thing where, like, obviously he was playing, but kind of playing more of a backup role, and now he's got a year under his belt and maybe let him run. But I think after a full season like that, if he wasn't getting majority carries and you've brought that other running back in the form of Gordon, I don't see how adding a Russell Wilson to the mix is going to increase either of their values, if not decrease both, and kind of handcuff some of that potential for Javonte.
Absolutely. And we talked about it on the last episode with the overabundance of pass catching options that they have there between Jerry Jeudy, Tim Patrick, the list goes on and on. I mean, Russell's going to have no shortage of targets down the field too. So I think it kind of not only handicaps the PPR ability, but definitely probably caps the carry volume that these guys get, unless it's, you know, a blowout game down the stretch, then they might get some garbage time. But I think the upside is severely capped here, to say the least.
I definitely think they both see a regression compared to last year.
And on to some wide receivers changing teams. We saw Christian Kirk and Zay Jones head off to Jacksonville. With how bad Trevor Lawrence was last year, do we care?
Ish. Zay Jones does nothing for me, no matter what team he's on. Obviously, he had some level of success to, you know, to even stay on the active roster with Oakland, or I'm sorry, Vegas last year. But does nothing for me. And honestly, Christian Kirk, I'm trying to think of a comparison in my head of how I feel about him, but he's just, he's not bad, but he's not like, he's just that, he's kind of like what, to go back to the recycle pile, what Landry's been the last couple of years, where he's got that name, like he was a higher pick, but, and you keep expecting him to have that 6, 7, 8 catch game for 80 yards, but he keeps getting you 4 catches for 45 yards and no touchdown.
Yeah, that's valid. I definitely see a bigger upside for Christian Kirk. I mean, we look at what Zay Jones did last year, and Jacksonville already has that in LaVisca Chenault. Chenault didn't do Jack last year. So I'm not buying a ton into either of these guys. I mean, Christian Kirk and Marvin Jones are going to have to be the guys. And if Trevor Lawrence takes a step forward, I could see there being viable production here. But given the uncertainty at the running back position, obviously you've got Travis Etienne coming back from a year-long injury. James Robinson's going to be on the shelf for the first handful of games. These guys might be forced to throw early and often. So the volume could be there, and that's the only thing that excites me a little bit about Kirk.
Yep, I would agree. Like I said, Jones cast off. Kirk definitely has that ability. If you're looking as a flyer, if you're counting on him for, you know, for a wide receiver 2 or something like that, I think you're in trouble. But if you have the ability to take a flyer on him, and have him be one of those bounce back candidates, I'm all in on that. But if you're banking on him, you are going to be sad.
Very sad. Almost as sad as Detroit Lions fans are year to year. We've got DJ Chark moving on from Jacksonville, heading to Detroit. With how good the Sun God was down the stretch last year, and them drafting a wide receiver very early in the draft, how much is he going to be fantasy relevant?
There's no doubt in my mind that he will be fantasy irrelevant. The sun is going to shine far too bright. You won't even be able to see DJ Chark on the field.
Yeah, I mean, between St. Brown, Jameson Williams, depending on how quickly he can recover from that ACL injury, I think these are going to be the top guys, and there's no reason they shouldn't be with how high of a draft stock Williams had and what St. Brown showed last year. I think in two wide receiver sets, these are going to be your guys. And then you add on a Hockenson and a pretty good running back core. I think Chark could be in for a rude awakening despite that $10 million contract.
Yeah, that's honestly, it's just a weird signing.
But moving on to guys we expect to be reasonably more relevant, Allen Robinson heading off to the LA Rams. Obviously, we saw them jettison Robert Woods and Odell Beckham. Can he return to relevance, be the guy that we saw early in his Chicago career, Jacksonville career?
I think he can. That obviously, that's an offense that's set up to succeed, especially with the head coach being the mastermind that he seems to be. Obviously, there was some injury stuff the last few years for Robinson, if I remember correctly. I think he was ultimately healthy last year, just no one could get him the ball because there was no good quarterback play,
yes,
which has been an absolute stable when you're talking about Chicago Bears quarterbacks since their inception. They're almost as scared of quarterback, good quarterbacks as Cleveland is. But I really like Robinson. I really don't view him much differently than a Robert Woods, to be honest with you, at this point in their careers. So obviously we saw that Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, I even had both of them on my team for a couple of years, and was starting them both, wide receiver one and two, and yeah, largely wasn't unhappy. So I would be more than happy to take a stab at Robinson. I definitely think he returns to certainly top 20 relevance, if not maybe, who knows, maybe a fringe top 15 guy.
Yeah, I'm honestly more bullish on the passing game in LA this year than I was last year. With the question marks that we have at the running back stable there, we saw Daryl Henderson deal with injury, and in the playoffs, Cam Akers was questionably effective at best. I just don't know what the running game is going to provide for them this year, so I think they're going to rely pretty heavily on those top two wide receivers. We could see an uptick in production for Tyler Higbee maybe, but he wasn't able to be counted on as a tight end one for most of last year anyway. So I expect a reasonably healthy workload for both of these guys. And we could even see Van Jefferson jump into the mix in these three wide receiver sets and could obviously make any of these three guys startable on a week-to-week basis.
I completely agree. And I think Higbee's had his chance to kind of get a foothold.
Right.
And I've kicked those tires a few times in the past few years, and I just don't see, like, he's fine, obviously. You know, if you really needed to stream somebody or something like that, he's a guy you can put in there and hope for 5 points. But as a true top eight tight end, he's not the guy. And they really like Van. You know, you see some of the behind the scenes stuff. He's well liked in that locker room, and there's obviously a tight relationship with McVay there. And that receiving group, receiver room should be a good one to be in this year.
Absolutely. And speaking of wide receiver rooms, we're going to move over to one that is rather decimated after a trade. Sammy Watkins off to the Green Bay Packers. Heard a lot of shouting from across the river about how great of a signing it was at the time, but I'm still not sure what to make of this. I mean, Aaron Rodgers can make anyone look good. We've seen him do that with Randall Cobb over the years, who's now largely irrelevant. What, if anything, do we make of this or any other wide receiver that they have?
I think you have to go back to the conversation of, like, how differently do you look at Rodgers versus Mahomes as a true quarterback raising the play of their receivers? Mm-hmm. If you view them remotely the same, Sammy Watkins was non-existent on that Chiefs team for most of his tenure there. Yeah, he had a few games, but that was a guy that right away you were excited and then faded into the background immediately. Here's another guy that's been on this is his fourth team, I think. What was it? Yeah. Or maybe even fifth. I can't remember if he was in Baltimore, but obviously Buffalo.
Yeah, he was in Baltimore.
Yeah. So, like, this is like his fifth team. there's a reason that a guy like that in a league like this that needs receivers keeps moving around.
Right.
I think he's irrelevant. I think Green Bay's hurting. I would love to know what Rodgers' opinion of all this is, because, you know, the fans are can't be happy. Now, seeing the fallout from everything, I think Sammy Watkins is your definite wide receiver one, just based on experience and pedigree going in. I could see him falling to third on the depth chart by the end of the season, just by the fact that he's older than the guys that they're going to give a shot to.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I guess in my heart of hearts, I view Sammy Watkins similar to like a Valdez Scantling type who was there last year. He might 100%. Have a boomer bust game, but largely could be left on your bench most weeks. So the question really boils down to, is he going to give the rookie the targets? Is he going to trust Alan Lazard? Because I don't think he's going back to Watkins or Cobb repeatedly. And does he make a tight end relevant again? We've seen Tanyan not do it with him. So I don't know what the answer is there. I'm probably going to end up putting my eggs in one of these baskets, and it'll probably be a Lazard or the highly drafted Watson. But at the end of the day, what has Lazard done with him previously? Not a whole lot. And Watson comes from an offense where they didn't throw the ball a whole lot. So I'm not really sure what I'm investing in here at this point.
No, I can't speak any differently to anything you just said. And I'd rather take a chance on Bob Tanyan at tight end versus taking Sammy at receiver. You know, when you look and you compare the positions the way it is, I'll take my chance with Tanyan every time. Sammy, I want nothing to do with Sammy.
Well, we're going to start bringing in the home stretch here. We'll talk about the tight end position, and arguably the two top tight ends on the market went to the same team, CJ Uzoma, Tyler Conklin, and they even drafted a tight end pretty highly in the draft. What, if anything, do you take away from this? Obviously, Uzoma and Conklin were streamable for good portions of last year, but are you trusting any of these guys with Zach Wilson at the helm?
What a weird, another weird franchise. Day in and day out, they never cease to make me scratch my head. I was one of those streamers of Uzoma last year, but that's just it. He's a streamer, and now he's going with two other tight ends. And he was playing with the darling of last season at quarterback.
With
Burrow. So I think this takes an unfortunate hit to those two kind of high-end free agents, as far as tight ends go, those higher-end free agent options that were out there. I think it takes a big bite out of what they bring to the table from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't see a ton of ways that these guys are productive, and this is twofold. I mean, obviously, Zach Wilson has to take a step forward, or he won't be the quarterback there for very long, and their depth chart is not very long nor distinguished. Joe Flacco, nothing to write home about as a backup there. But in addition to that, they've got two pretty highly regarded running backs there this year. We saw Michael Carter be productive last year, and obviously they drafted Breece Hall in the second round. So a lot of expectations there as well, but they doubled down on that, and on top of Elijah Moore, drafted another wide receiver in Garrett Wilson. So between trying to feed those mouths at wide receiver, handing the ball off pretty regularly, which I'm going to expect from a pretty bad team who has honestly improved quite a bit on the offensive line. I expect a healthy dose of the run game between those guys. And I just don't know what's going to be left, especially when you're two, three tight ends deep at the position. My expectations are pretty low. Well, with that in mind, we're going to bring this to the conclusion here. We talked about it at the top. We got a back-to-back episode today and tomorrow. Draft recap incoming tomorrow. We're going to talk about Breece Hall, all the quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers, and a handful of tight ends as well. So stay tuned for that. Obviously, we've got some content coming up here. Weekly content from Tyler, Carlton, myself, all about the world of baseball. So stay tuned for that. Jason, you got anything on the burner for us that you care to divulge?
I don't know if you mentioned it, doing a podcast on the NFL draft.
Is that right?
I've been right now doing rankings jumping into some of the positional rankings for baseball.
Yeah.
Doing my best to keep my irregular articles coming out to keep people wanting more on that end. Don't have anything outside of that podcast and some more podcast stuff for football. I don't have anything article-wise coming out quite yet, but starting to work that up because draft season is upon us for all those dynasty leagues out there from now until the end of training camp.
Yes, absolutely. It is indeed on the forefront, and can't wait to jump into that. Honestly, the most magical time of year for me. You've got hockey playoffs on right now. You've got baseball regular season, and we're gearing up for fantasy football season. What a time to be alive.
You just can't put words to it.
Well, with that, we'll sign off. Obviously, I'm Tess Monster. You can find me everywhere. Obviously, here at the Dynasty Locker Room, Twitter, Reddit, at DLR Tess Monster. Find me here on the podcast. And while we're talking about the podcast, don't forget to rate us. We'll take that 5-star rating if you're so kind as to indulge us. And absolutely give us a comment, give us a review. Would love to hear any thoughts that you guys have on this. Jason, any last thoughts?
Not anything on this end.
All right. Well, until next time, we'll catch you tomorrow.